Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to Allocation Disorder, brought to you this week by the Keg of Evanston. Rest in peace. I am Sam Staskel. He's Paul Tenorio. Paul, what's up, dude? How you doing tonight?
I'm great, man. You just threw me back to my college days and Monday nights at the Keg. I didn't see that one coming.
Man, Keg Mondays. May they never be forgotten and never be remembered. I think that's the best way to put it. Big show tonight. Lots to get to. Lots of news since we last spoke. What was it? We didn't do a Thursday show last week, right? Was it an early in the week show? I don't even remember. It's been a while. Sacramento is no longer in MLS, at least for the time being. That happened since we last recorded a show. That's a big deal. We're going to talk a lot about that. What might be next? MLS expansion in general, teams for sale, the dynamics of that, and then a few other things towards the end of the show. An update on the U.S. Open Cup and a couple of things, a couple of youngsters. Solid homegrowns in MLS getting some contract extensions, implications of those on maybe some national team, maybe some European moves. So we'll get into all that, but start in the most important spot, and that is Sacramento. So last Friday night, around 8 p.m. Eastern time, news emerged that Ron Burkel, who had agreed in October 2019 to bring an MLS team to Sacramento, he decided he didn't want to do that anymore, citing financial difficulties caused by the pandemic, rising construction costs for the stadium. He pulled out and left a living, breathing club out there in Sacramento, and a lot of people associated with it and a lot of people that root for it, holding the bag, so to speak. So he was the money man. He pulled out of that deal. It was supposed to be a $200 million expansion fee. We reported at The Athletic in January that they missed the deadline to submit their long-form expansion agreement to the league and make their first payment on the expansion fee. They never resolved those issues. They were trying to cut costs on the stadium. They, for whatever reason, and this is still kind of developing, we're still trying to find out a lot of these details, they decided to walk away. So MLS is not going to be in Sacramento in 2023, as was previously planned. NWSL is in jeopardy in Sacramento. We'll see where that lands. But a lot of moving parts and a lot to talk about regarding this update. So, Paul, what are your main takeaways off of the news? And I'm sure I missed a lot of actual factual updates, so maybe you can fill listeners in on those. But what's the reaction to the news?
I thought we'd start on where were you on Friday night when the news broke? Because I was halfway to go pick up some burritos for me and my wife. And
you called me.
I called
when
you.
When Paul calls me like past working hours, it's not good news ever. It's just like, and I think I answered the phone with, uh-oh. And you were like, you just started yelling. And I was walking to the grocery store when this happened. So yeah, I was on the street, walking down the street.
Friday night news dumps, never a fun thing for reporters. I mean, look, this is huge news for Major League Soccer. I think in multiple ways, multiple layers to this news, Sam, right? I mean, we can talk about Major League Soccer and where it's going based on the momentum of expansion, right? That's a huge part of why there is a confidence in the growth of the sport in this country, why there's a confidence of the growth of the league, is that there have been all of these billionaire owners who have bought into Major League Soccer over the last decade or so. I think especially when you start looking from 2015 on and the prices that have been paid for these expansion teams, the success of those expansion teams that have come on in the last 6 years. And it's provided a lot of positivity around the league, positive news, this idea that MLS is, you know, financially growing, that it is a worthwhile investment, the valuations of the clubs continue to go through the roof. And so to take all of that positive momentum and then have this happen in Sacramento, what it does is it squashes it. It just stomps on it. And I think that it is the first egg on face moment for Major League Soccer in some time. I just think there has been so much
in terms
much
of
more,
expansion.
In terms of expansion. In terms of, well, yeah, okay. Yeah, we've covered some other egg on face moments too. But I just think that it's significant because you don't see this happen very often for a league to announce an expansion city and then suddenly, Sam, it's gone. It's just they erased it off their website.
Yeah, no, it's definitely. I'm trying to find the. I mean, I guess it's embarrassing. I don't think it squashes the momentum, though, like you said. Like, I actually really strongly disagree with that. Like, it's a momentary embarrassment, right? And the league will probably learn some lessons from this, right, in terms of the due diligence it does with owners. But, you know, the signs were good on Ron Burkle. He's a part owner of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Since he came there, he basically helped save that club.
Positive reputation in Pittsburgh. There. Positive
yeah,
reputation.
They've won multiple championships. He has a reputation as a pretty silent owner, like a guy who will fund the organization and get out of the way and let the people on the business side and the hockey side do their thing. Yeah, a little bit of a rep is like kind of an aloof, eccentric guy. Maybe a little darker than that, depending on what internet rabbit holes you go down. But in terms of his sports ownership, he has, you know, prior to this, an excellent track record. Excellent, right? The Penguins, it's like a dream scenario. So yeah, it's embarrassing for the league that they did the whole dog and pony show in October 2019. And Burkle was on stage with Garber and, you know, they held up the scarves and they had all the coverage and Sacramento was finally going to get its berth, right? I think Commissioner Garber said in 2015 that it would be a matter of when, not if, for Sacramento. And it took 4 years from then just to get the expansion agreement done. And here, a year and a half after that, we're doing this show, right? So it's been a long, drawn-out process there to begin with. But that being said, I don't think this has any effect on how attractive MLS is to billionaire and 100-millionaire owners and private equity firms. I don't think this changes that at all, because I don't think this was a situation where Burkle was like, you know, the business fundamentals just don't work for me. To me, from everything I've been able to gather, and all the reporting that we've done, as a team and that you've done and shared with me, it sounds like Burkle was kind of never really that into this. And then the pandemic hit and he was sort of half in and half out. And then he starts to take some financial hits with his other businesses, maybe, certainly with the Penguins, and half in, half out becomes kind of more quarter in, three quarter out. And then maybe he starts looking for an escape, and here we are. And in some ways, I think MLS dodges a major bullet, right? Because you don't want an owner who's not committed and is kind of like wishy-washy about the whole thing. That's not what you want at all. And then, you know, you can get into the market side of it, which we did in the piece that we wrote, but we can talk about that later. But I strongly disagree. You know, at the end of the day, these are really scarce assets, right? And while the financial fundamentals at this point in the league's history are questionable, right? Teams lose money every year. There is a strong narrative that you can push if you want, that there is a ton of room for growth. And I think that's real. And so if you want to push that, great. People can buy into that. And oh, by the way, what I said at the beginning, scarce asset. This owning a sports team scores you major points in the rich guy Olympics. And there's only so many of these to go around, and MLS is more accessible than it is in any other league in North America.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with some of what you say there, but look, the business model and the financials did factor into this decision. We know that, right?
Yeah, they did. I wasn't, but like that had a lot to do with Burkle's finances.
But let's just point that out. I mean, the rising cost of the stadium had gotten out of control in his mind, an extra close to $100 million based on
right,
our reporting.
But you take
the $200 million expansion fee that he was on the hook for, and suddenly you're starting to get into some serious cash before we even kick a ball. Now compare
right,
that.
But that was the case when he bought in, though.
It wasn't though, because let's compare it even to Charlotte. We all talk about the $300 million that David Tepper paid that can rise to $325 million or somewhere in that neighborhood. And you look at his all in expenses with stadium and team, it's still less than $400 million. So in this COVID era,
are the renovations less than $75 million that they're going to do?
Somewhere
in
that range that they're anticipating. So he's getting help from the county and et cetera. So look, my point is that, you know, we do have to acknowledge that in this current, I'm not saying this is going to be the long term, but in this current environment, in a post COVID or, you know, in the middle of COVID era, that type of money gets harder to justify. And that's essentially where Burkle stepped out. And I think for right now, what I'm trying to get to is this idea that I don't think that there is any sort of quick, rapid conclusion to what happened here in Sacramento. I think
Why does there need to be MLS to sit and wait?
And I think that, you know, right now we know that there are multiple MLS teams on the market. They're more ready to go. You know, RSL has a training facility. RSL has a stadium. Orlando has a stadium.
They're playing games this season. Yeah.
Houston has a stadium, you know. So there are reasons to go that direction versus go to an expansion team. My point is just that I thought it was a big setback in this kind of flow of positivity, along with COVID, by the way, which I think exposed the negatives of the MLS business model as it is right now, which is how dependent it is on game day income versus
Do you think COVID exposed that? We've been talking about that for years.
I think I think in the grander picture, it exposed just how vulnerable the business model was. And it's not as though MLS didn't know that it needed to increase its TV money, but I think it certainly has pushed that to the forefront and increased and the importance of the next two TV deals. You and I have talked about why this next TV deal might not be the big one, but I just am I would be surprised to see MLS announce a 30th team. I'm going to say before the 2022 World Cup. That's crazy. I know that's crazy, but I wouldn't be surprised to see this be, you know, over a year, maybe 2 years of waiting and letting, you know, letting the market stir itself back up.
That wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if it happened before either. But I think they're going to be patient.
I'm going to jump in, Sam, because, you know, to your point of like, it wouldn't surprise
nothing
me.
Nothing would surprise me.
You know, when you're talking to people who are familiar with MLS.
The situation.
This whole thing. You know, one person just said to me, don't make this more complicated than it is. You know?
Making it more complicated than it is, like, serves us in our employment. Okay.
But in this case, it's all right. I was gonna make a joke, but the people that would be the butt of that joke probably listen to this podcast, as I'm learning.
Well, you just insulted them anyway, so you might as well make it.
I think, you know, when MLS has looked toward expansion, as long as there's a market and a stadium deal and a really rich person willing to pay whatever price they put on it,
boom,
expansion's happening. So you're right, Sam, in that if there's a billionaire who comes along and he says, I'm willing to put down $350 million to have a team in Vegas. I'm willing to put down $300 million to bring a team back to Sacramento again. I'm willing to put down $350 million for a team in Detroit.
Yeah.
It's happening. As long as there's a stadium
plan.
Even just a hint of
San Diego. I don't think a hint of a plan. They went through that with Miami. They're going through it with New York City FC. Like, that you're going to have a locked and loaded stadium plan to get a deal done, I think. That's my opinion.
I think people that are criticizing Charlotte would argue that, too. I mean, I guess he's renovating his stadium there.
I mean, they have a stadium plan. You might not like it, but they have a plan. You know, there's a solution there in place. Like, you might not love it, but it's a plan. Anyway, I think the Sacramento stuff is fascinating, but I've been doing a lot of reporting on this, like MLS ownership and valuations, and I'm going to have a story come out about it at some point here in the not too distant future. But the more I do it, like, I don't want to, like, give away the whole story or anything. I mean, I guess I won't. But the more I do it, the more it's sort of driven into my brain that, like, this isn't really about financials for most of these people, right? It's about buying something cool. They have more money than they know what to do with, and buying into MLS is less than buying into any other league in North America. And you can be like, well, Southampton's going to go for $200 million. Why wouldn't they just buy that? Well, maybe they don't want a team in Southampton. Maybe they want a team in their hometown, and they can build something for their own community, right? And that's an important part of this. They can leave a legacy. It gets them access to different people. It puts them in the club. And I think as long as that's the case, and as long as there's a scarcity of available teams, which there definitely is, then I think demand is probably going to outweigh supply. And I think as long as that's true, I don't think MLS is going to have too big of an issue finding investors. One thing I wanted to point out here, Paul, Meg Whitman tried to get in on Sacramento a few years ago. And there's Lyle. I don't know if you guys can hear him. He wants to talk about Meg Whitman. She ran for governor of California, longtime executive with Procter & Gamble. You know, Quibi, she was involved with. May Quibi rest in peace. Long live Quibi. But she ended up buying in late 2019, 20% stake of FC Cincinnati for $100 million. Maybe she wants to make another play for Sacramento. Who knows? That could be interesting. So I don't think Sacramento's out of this, but I do want to transition this discussion forward into, like, what next? And we've established that there's going to be some patience and that this is going to take some time. But what do you think of Sacramento's chances to keep an MLS team? And where do you think this is going? I think we're in agreement that MLS will eventually get to 32, at least. So that leaves 3 spots available now.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
I mean, I think again, as long as there are buyers willing to spend, then we'll see another round of expansion. So I don't disagree that we'll probably end up at 32. I think Sacramento's got a decent shot. I think it's really important for Sacramento to try to get on the faster end of this, to make what I just said about it taking some time very, very wrong. Because the longer that spot stays open, the more their chances for a team go down, right?
The more time other cities have to get an ownership and stadium thing
plan in place, right? Yeah. And I think there is, based on the people we've talked to, Sam, in our reporting, I think there is certainly a supportive faction of owners who are really bullish on the potential of Sacramento as a market, who believe that it could be, you know, a Portland type market where, you know, the team is very popular and they sell out their stadium and there's a lot of excitement in the city and it's the right demographics and there's political support there, which is really important. And, you know, they think it could be great. There's also, based on our reporting, a faction of owners, or at least multiple owners, who are saying, hey, let's use this opportunity to pump the brakes, open things back up, find the best market, the best owner, the most money that we can find.
Yeah. I think that will rule the day, by the way, right? Because, like, why not? Even if Sacramento gets somebody in place quickly, why rush back into it? Why not open it up and see how high you can drive that expansion fee, right? Like, that's, MLS is winning on that front on this deal, right? The $200 million is gone, but they're going to replace that with a team that's going to pay $300 plus for an expansion fee. So MLS is winning on that aspect of it. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. There's an interesting idea that somebody has mentioned in the course of our reporting and that we printed in our story in the immediate aftermath about this, that they saw this as a net positive for the league. And I'm not sure I totally agree with that. But the idea was that, like, Sacramento's not that sexy of a market. It's not going to do anything for the league to move the needle nationally or internationally. And maybe alternative expansion cities, a place like Phoenix or San Diego or Vegas, might do more in that regard. And maybe, but, you know, maybe they're not as, you know, much of a success locally, right? And so anyway, I think that discussion's interesting. What do you think of it?
Can I just clarify something? Because it's kind of been something that's annoyed me on Twitter in the aftermath of that quote.
No clarification.
It's not about how cool the market is. Like, oh, Sacramento's not cool enough. Nobody cares how cool a market is.
I mean, but that's kind of what it is, though.
It's not really what it is. It's money.
But it's
money.
Kind of what it is.
Will Phoenix drive more eyeballs to the league? Will it make it more attractive on a TV deal? Yes.
Right.
Okay.
And why will it drive more eyeballs?
Because it's
and
a
make
bigger
it more attractive.
Market.
And
not
why
that
is
it's
it bigger?
A cooler market. Is Phoenix cooler than Sacramento? Toss up, in my opinion.
I
think Sacramento.
I've never
is probably
been
cooler.
To Sacramento, so I can't really say.
I've
anything.
Been to Phoenix, and I can tell you that there's a good chance it's at least a toss up.
All right, fair enough. Look at you insulting Phoenix and Sacramento in one sentence.
I enjoy my time in Phoenix. I hike. I, you know, get not lots of sun.
But I mean, you live in Chicago. Like, you know, everyone in Chicago like loves spending time in Arizona. It's like their favorite pastime.
Yeah, you go down, you play a couple rounds of golf. All I'm saying is it's not like Sacramento needs to be, you know, beating out Miami on the cool factor. Not that I'm endorsing Miami as cool either, for the record.
Will you just like take a stance on any of these cities being cool or not?
I'm just saying it's not about what's cool. It's about what's the best business decision. And that factors into what the expansion fee is, how it helps the potential TV markets. You know, are these places where there's a better owner or a better stadium deal in place? You know, do they believe that it could, with Vegas, where they really want to tap into sports betting and growing the audience through sports betting, it's a much better market to do that for Major League Soccer. It's not about what's cool. Who would be the person at MLS that's deciding what the cool market is?
That's a good question. Let me think about this for a second. It's not going to be Don Garber. He knows he needs to outsource that, right? Don's a smart guy. He knows he's going to outsource that. He's not young, right? Like, I'm not saying he's not hip, but he's not young. Who's the person? Andrew Wiebe.
Brilliant.
It's Andrew Wiebe. I hope he hears. He'll text us 2 weeks from now when he listens to this episode and say something. I don't know. He's the tastemaker. I think we can all agree on that. What were we talking about? I forgot.
Whether or not Sacramento's cool.
Right.
No, I just think, look, I think we're at a place right now where we can pretty confidently say it's not like Sacramento is going to snap its fingers, find a new owner, and this all gets resolved in the next few months. It's not that simple. It's going to take time. And by the way, the vetting process for Major League Soccer is a complicated one. So that in itself takes many months to vet owners before you can
kind
of
move
forward with the process of approving an owner and improving a sale. So we're gonna need some time on this. I am interested to see, though, how quickly any of these markets try to put together some sort of momentum to put their name near the top of the list. Because I would say Sacramento, they have to try to stay in the news. They have to try to keep the energy.
Yeah.
You know, but
because it's not that cool and people aren't going to be keeping it top of mind.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Does Phoenix jump in there? Does Detroit come back into the picture? San Diego,
Tampa, perhaps.
Vegas, Tampa.
Tampa Bay.
Tom Brady, maybe he'll bring a team to MLS. We don't know.
Whoa. Wow. I'm into that.
He doesn't have billionaire money, does he?
Giselle.
Yeah. Maybe.
They could put a group together.
They could definitely put a group together. Sam and Wiebe would fully endorse the cool factor of Gronk and Brady as owners.
Listen, man, it's the city of champions, okay? I don't think anyone can deny that. And I don't know if you've spent time in Tampa. I have. Talk about a city that fits the chaotic, weird, crazy vibe of MLS. That's it right there, man. Like, that's the equivalent. If that's MLS personified as a city, it's Tampa. Oddly enough, that's where USL's headquartered.
I'm just glad that we've evolved enough on this show that you're now questioning whether or not I've ever been to Tampa.
Oh, right. You did used to live in Orlando. It's your hometown. I mean, but I thought you never left. So, you know.
Oh,
you only went to Daytona.
You only went to
the Atlantic coast.
When I needed to think, I just drove I-4 back and forth.
Is that right?
Tampa, Orlando.
Super relaxing drive. Super scenic. All right. So we've talked about MLS going to 32. That leaves three spots. I'm going to put you on the spot, even Mr. Wishy-Washy over here. I'm going to put you on the spot. If you were Don Garber, or if you were the entire MLS Board of Governors, where would you put those three teams?
Wow. I would put a team for sure in San Diego. Assuming that they can all of these cities could get stadium deals. I would put a team in San Diego.
Yeah, we're assuming that.
I would put a team in Phoenix, and I would put a team in Detroit.
Detroit?
Yeah.
Underdog.
Because I'm thinking,
is Detroit cooler than Sacramento?
Ooh. See, I've got some bias here. My mom's from Detroit. I got family in Detroit. I've been to Detroit. I haven't been to Sacramento. Again, we're going to put it in the toss-up. I'm going to keep wishy-washy. I just look at it more of a geographic spread. It's harder for me to justify Sacramento when you have San Jose down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think San Diego would be a really important market for MLS. I think Phoenix as well. I think through the prism of youth development, finding players, and reach of MLS. Those would be the three. Maybe my Detroit bias crept in there, but yeah, that would be the three. What
Detroit
about you?
Style pizza, yay or nay?
Nay.
Nay?
I haven't had.
Wow.
I mean, I haven't. Little Caesars is like the last time I had a Detroit style pizza. That's not true.
Dude,
every time I go home,
you ever been to Jets?
House. Yeah, I've been to Jets once.
All right. Go to Jets. There you go. Heard it from me. This is
a
very
Chicago
podcast. My cousin
is visiting
me this
weekend from Detroit. She's coming on Saturday to meet my daughter for the first time, and I'll tell her to bring a Detroit-style pizza for
Just
me.
Go to Jets. There's like 800 locations in a mile of your house.
The real thing from Detroit.
Because it'll be cold and gross. That's why. It's a long drive. Anyway, I digress. You're not going to be polite and ask me the question that I asked you. So
I did, but you were too busy yelling about Detroit-style pizza to hear.
All right, whatever. We'll have to play that back. I don't believe you. But if I had to pick three expansion cities, I agree with you on San Diego and Phoenix. I don't think I agree with you on Detroit. All right, so if I pick San Diego and Phoenix, that puts 15 teams in the Western Conference. Is that right?
I'm not doing your math for you. Yeah, I think.
All right, so there's 13 right now, so plus two. The expansion teams are St. Louis and Charlotte. St. Louis could be in the West, theoretically. Anyway, so it's 15 or 16. You kind of do need more in the Midwest, though, don't you?
Yes.
You kind of do.
You have Chicago, Minnesota, and Columbus. I guess Cincinnati now. So that's four, and that's it.
Yeah.
Am I missing anyone? No.
Well, St. Louis. Kansas City.
Well, you're putting them in the West, so they're not even going to play those Eastern Conference.
Well, they're still in the Midwest, though. I mean, Minnesota's in the West. We're talking geography, not conference. Come on, man. All right, let's go Milwaukee. Dark horse.
Milwaukee?
Yeah, that's right.
Where did that come from?
Just the shores of Lake Michigan. I don't know. Like, I actually think MLS would really work in Milwaukee, now that I think about it. I know there's been zero interest from anyone in Milwaukee, but that doesn't mean there can't be in the future. Charlotte came out of nowhere with David Tepper, you know? Maybe the Bucks owners, maybe Giannis wants to put a group together. Maybe Giannis and Aaron Rodgers and J.J. Watt get something going on. Who knows? I think that could be cool. I actually think it would be a nice little rivalry with Chicago. And I actually think that city, it would do well in that city. I really do. And it's bigger than Detroit, I think, at this point. I'm not sure how much it's doing for you internationally. I don't know how cool it is, but I've been to Milwaukee. And so that's earning points.
So far, we've had two endorsements for MLS expansion teams based on, well, I've been there.
All right, so there you go. I'm going off the board. Milwaukee, Phoenix, and San Diego.
Can I just also say, though, that it's just a weird dynamic here. It's always been this weird dynamic between Sacramento and MLS, where Sacramento has always seemed ready to roll, and they're like super excited, and there's all this energy behind them. And then, like, it doesn't happen. And then it doesn't happen again, and then it doesn't happen again. And it just feels like, I don't know, like, I get so torn when I think about it, because there are aspects of that club that are so ready to roll, you know? Like,
so
they
many,
have an academy. They've been playing, they've had fans, like, they seem like they've drawn well as a USL team. It reminds me of Orlando in that way, right? They could be a great success.
Or Portland, which everyone compares it to. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, no, it that's, just hasn't that's, happened.
I'm glad you brought that up, because everyone that I've spoken to about this is like, oh, Sacramento would kill it locally. Everyone, zero doubt, right? And that's really disappointing, right? Because there are a lot of people that put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that club with the idea that one day it would move up. And then they brought that idea to fruition, and then the rug got pulled out from under him. And honestly, he's not going to talk. I've reached out to his PR guy like four times in the last 6 days. But Ron Burkle, like, he owes that city an apology, in my opinion. Like, this is ridiculous. You agreed to do a deal, and you're backing out of it. And that's your prerogative. You didn't sign anything. You didn't do anything illegal, it seems. Right? So, go on and do your thing. But, like, to do that, it's not the right thing to do. I'll put it like that. And this is not, while he had some financial difficulties, he probably could have swung this thing, man. He just bought Neverland Ranch for like $25 million like 2 months ago. Like, he probably could have swung this thing. He just didn't want to at the end of it, and he backed out of a deal. And
yeah. And I wanted to emphasize,
to not speak publicly after that, I think, is kind of cowardly.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I just wanted to shout him out too, because neither of us picked Sacramento as one of our three markets we'd go to if MLS were to go to 32. But I do think that they deserve tremendous amount of respect for the work they put in to try to get it there. And all that market has been missing, the only thing that market is missing
owner.
Is a billionaire owner who will take it over the line all the way.
I mean,
the
and
line.
It looked like that was Ron Burkle, who is a billionaire. Like, right. Yeah. And it's a shame that it didn't work out. And by the way, like, I think if Sacramento went in, I agree with all those people that we talked to. I think it would be a huge success. I think it would be good for the league.
Totally anecdotal, but you and I both have a friend who lives there, Ryan Dietz, a good friend of mine I went to college with. He lives in that area now, and he says all the time, he says to me, it would destroy in this market. It would kill in this market. You know, he always asks me, well, what's the update on Sacramento? When are they coming in? So I might not have been to Sacramento, but I know someone who's been to Sacramento. So they're
you
on
know
my
who
list
else has
still.
Been to Sacramento? Andrew Wiebe. That's who. On that note, I think we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back afterwards with a little bit more ownership, sale talk, and a few other topics as well. Allocation Disorder, we'll be back after the break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Welcome back to Allocation Disorder, brought to you by Mustard's Last Stand. I'm Sam Staskel, he's Paul Tenorio. Thanks for sticking with us. We just talked a lot about Sacramento. We're going to transition off of that, but stay sort of on the topic of ownership. There are three teams up for sale in MLS that we know of, in Houston, Salt Lake, and Orlando. We're following all of those stories. We're tracking them. We'll keep you guys updated as soon as we can. Which, who knows? Maybe it might be soon. Maybe. I don't know. Who's to say? But I do want to talk about a couple of other elements, not necessarily related to any of those three markets, but more to the league as a whole. I've been talking to a bunch of people recently who kind of are of the mind that before the 2026 World Cup comes around and before this possible inflection point that may or may not be an inflection point, depending on who you talk to, but this possible inflection point in terms of valuation and momentum and growth and all that stuff for MLS, they think more owners will start to sell before then, and that you'll start to see more teams go up for sale prior to that point, even beyond those three that I just mentioned. So, Paul, I'm curious what you think of that general notion.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I think the growth of the league is going to accelerate in the interim. I really do believe that the league sees 2026 as this really important moment, because who knows when it's going to happen again. You and I had a conversation with a source in North American soccer who pointed that out. When's the next time the World Cup's coming around to this?
It's going to be a generation,
right?
Generation.
So
yeah.
This is a really important moment to seize on and to spend around, because you're only going to get one chance. And there are some owners who I think are not going to be willing to or able to spend at that rate. And so I could absolutely see other markets coming up for sale. And even as you and I spend a significant amount of our time reporting out these three teams that are for sale right now and trying to figure out what's happening and who could be potential buyers and when the sales are going to happen and for how much and what the valuations of the teams are. You know, even then I start to hear already this owner is really, you know, not in love with being an MLS owner and, you know, could very well look to move things, but it maybe now is not the right time because there are three other teams for sale and it's a tough market to sell out of, you know, so it does not surprise me at all that there's a belief that you could see more teams sell, Sam. I mean, I would say what? Would you put it at maybe like a half dozen owners who you could justify in your mind saying, okay, now is the time for me to step away and maximize my money?
That sounds about right. I mean, I think I'm trying to think who would jump to the top of that list. I think San Jose would probably be on there. I think Philadelphia would probably be on there. And maybe these aren't full sales, right? Maybe these are injections of private equity or institutional capital, right? Because that's a thing that's allowed now in MLS. They can't buy more than 49% of a club, but they can buy part of it. And so if an owner is short on cash but wants to keep running that team, then maybe you sell 49%, right?
Seattle?
I mean, Seattle's sort of done that already. I don't think Adrian Aguilar is going anywhere, though. I could definitely see them as a club that
kind of maybe does another round of a minority ownership
that,
sale.
Yeah, that I could see. But no, I don't think Adrian Aguilar is going anywhere. I think he's going to have the controlling stake for as long as he is able to, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. Vancouver would be another one that sort of jumps out at me, although they've started spending more recently, so who knows?
And Greg Kerfoot is very involved at the league level.
Yep, 100%. But it wouldn't shock me. I think that's only three, though, that I've named. Red Bull? Definitely Red Bull would be one. Any other jump out at you?
Maybe? I'm still curious about DC United. I think that's a good call. Stephen Kaplan, you know, certainly doesn't fall into the pool of people who would need to sell. But I could see them being an ownership group that's interested in selling, or certainly would be open to an injection of capital down the road at some point.
No, I think that's a good call. Maybe there's another one or two out there that we're missing. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see over the next two, three, four, 5 years how that shakes out. Because I do think that there are going to be some more teams up for sale. And I just want real quick on the private equity thing. People are like, okay, why would a private equity fund invest in MLS? Typically, their exit timeframes are like 5-ish years or so. And so if you're going to buy 40% of an MLS team at a valuation of $400 million, what is that? Like, you know, $175 million, I'm not doing the math. I'm just sort of guessing off the top of my head. That's a lot of money. That's serious. And if you're going to increase the valuation over 3, 4, 5 years, that's a pretty significant bet that you're making. Particularly with this next round of TV rights, like people are not super confident that there's going to be a huge jump. In fact, they're confident there's not going to be a huge jump. The people that I'm talking to. So I don't know. That's going to be interesting, but I think that there are cases that you can make where team X, Y, or Z, you know, they're operating decently right now. And if you inject another $50 million or $100 million into their account, then they can hit a tipping point and go next level. And that's where I think those PE firms would be interested. But I think that's a small number of MLS clubs that would go for that sort of thing. And I think MLS will be really selective with which firms and companies it lets do that. So I don't think that's going to be like a huge trend or anything. But I just wanted to say that. I'm rambling now. But yeah, what was that, like five teams that we listed, Paul? So, you know, I think that's a healthy number. And I'm curious to see when expansion ends, how this ends, quote unquote, assuming it ends at 32, how the narrative shifts. Does then that become a situation where we might start to see teams moving? What do you think?
I think that's when you start to hear threats of movement. You know, whether teams actually move, I think it becomes very difficult. You know, this league, one of the biggest areas of growth for Major League Soccer has been in their investment in infrastructure, stadiums, training facilities, trying to really actually penetrate the markets that they're in. They haven't succeeded in some of these older markets, but those are the harder markets to walk away from, right? You're not walking away from New York or Chicago or even Dallas. You know, I think it's very difficult to walk away from those markets.
Aren't going anywhere in Dallas. So.
Right. So I think that, you know, when you look at other professional sports leagues in this country, you see that there are multiple instances of owners holding the specter of moving a team in order to get a better stadium deal when it's time to get a new stadium. And I think that'll become a very normal part of Major League Soccer, just as it's a normal part of the NFL or NBA.
Yeah. I think that's way down the road, though, because most of the we're getting to the point now where a lot of teams do have stadiums and do have a lot of money in the ground. And eventually those stadiums will become undesirable or whatever. But I think we're probably 15, 20 years away from that.
Depending on the market. Columbus already reached that.
Yeah, they did, but that's in the rear view at this point. But, like, let's think about the markets that don't have stadiums sorted, right? New England would be kind of one of the more glaring ones. But they're owned by the Crafts.
NYCFC.
Right? NYCFC, but there's so much value in being in New York. And, you know, pre-pandemic reports, they were closer than they'd ever been. They have a site. They just need to get that thing approved, right? There's a lot of hoops that they have to jump through still, but like they were making progress on that front. Vancouver, I'm sort of interested by. Montreal, I'm sort of interested by. Because they need a new stadium in a bad way to kind of increase their revenue. And I think Vancouver falls into that same boat. But I also think if either of those ownership groups were to sell, and I don't think Montreal would, because they're trying to do this thing with Bologna where it's like a global network, that sort of stuff. But if either of them were to sell, I feel like they would both be like, we need to sell to someone who's committed to keep this team here in Canada and in this city. So I don't know. I mean, this is projecting. We're talking decades. We're talking decades down the line.
Another stadium that I could see being an issue on the closer end. I think it'll be one of the next stadiums where you hear about negotiations with the city of Philadelphia and how, I mean, already that stuff has started to crop up, right?
It has?
Yeah, there's been speculation about, I think Pablo Maher reported it for The Athletic. I hope so, because we're talking about it on the podcast right now.
Fact check us, listeners. This isn't necessarily true. Paul may have just misremembered something. There you go. Cover now.
It happens from time to time. But I think Philadelphia's stadium issue has the potential for stadium issues near term than, you know, some of these other.
Define more near term. 10 years?
Like a decade, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm like weirdly optimistic about Philadelphia right now, which I don't know, man. I'm like weirdly optimistic. What's going on with me, Paul? I'm supposed to be a curmudgeon. I don't know what's happening.
Forgotten about my hometown on this episode. You're being positive about everything. You talked up Detroit pizza on the show. I mean, you're just a happy person.
I do like Jets pizza. Like that would have been true previous to this, you know, non-heel turn. Anyway, I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on for the next 20 to 30 years in MLS. So stay vigilant, listeners. It's going to be very important here over the next few years. A few other things. Jeff Reuter and I reported earlier today on Thursday that MLS is making a decision on how it's going to populate the U.S. Open Cup. The U.S. Open Cup this year, for those who don't know, is much smaller than usual due to complications of COVID and the busy international schedule. There are only 24 teams total, down from what would have been 101 eligible clubs. Only 8 MLS teams will be involved this year. That's out of 24 American teams. And it sounds like the league is going to do a situation where the first 3 games of the regular season, after 3 games, they're going to just put all the American teams in a single table, and the top 8 qualify for the Open Cup at that point. So that sounds like the system. People are a little bit in their feelings about that, but I think people would have been in their feelings about literally any system that MLS used. I don't mind it. I think it's kind of a cool way to add some stakes to the early part of the season. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a way to involve every MLS team in like almost a pseudo qualification, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
That makes it a best case scenario. And I mean, I feel like I always look at the CONCACAF Champions League qualifiers and I always look at the US Open winner like, you know, like which one of these is not like the other, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, let's not trash talk this qualification method in an imperfect year.
It's the quickest way to qualify. Yeah. And MLS teams are going to be entering at the round of 16, assuming everything goes smoothly with the tournament. So, you know, what is that? You win 4 matches, you're in the CCL. That's not so bad. That's not so bad of a route. Much easier than the other ones.
Let me interject here quickly, Sam, to defend my sanity.
Please.
I did pull up Pablo's story about Chester. There was this
you fact-checked yourself.
According to multiple sources with detailed knowledge of the situation, the union have preliminarily explored the idea of relocating to downtown Philadelphia in the coming years.
Wow.
I may be getting older, Sam, but I still got it up here, you know?
You know what? All those years in Orlando didn't rot your brain permanently. You should be proud of yourself. Round of applause for Paul. Way to go, buddy. You did it. So yeah, it should add some stakes to the beginning part of the season. I was talking to a GM today who, you know, I was talking to him while his team was at training, and he was telling me that the team captain, you know, before their first preseason training session the other day was going, guys, we have to come out of the gates firing so we can make the Open Cup. Right. So I think that could be kind of cool for the first. Is it fair from a competitive standpoint? No, but nothing really is, you know, like you could be like, well, you could take the top eight teams from last year, but that's, they wouldn't have known that they were fighting for the Open Cup, you know, so that's not really fair either. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. A couple of other items that Jeff and I reported, one other item that Jeff and I reported, Sam Vines, Colorado and U.S. men's national team left back. Maybe, I don't, is he the number one left back at this point, Paul?
No, I think Serginho Dest would be the number one left back in a worst case scenario, and Reggie Cannon would start at right back. I think that would be the preferred choice, and Anthony Robinson still in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, sure. He does play in the Premier League pretty regularly, so, you know, that's not nothing. But anyway, Sam Vines, 21 years old. He's rapidly rising the depth chart, I think it's fair to say. He signed a new deal in Colorado that will keep him under club control through 2025. So long-term situation. He was in the last year of his contract. Here, this year, James Sands, another talented youngster, New York City FC midfielder / center back. I think he's 20, so even younger than Vines. He signed a 5-year extension. And both of these moves are like very much geared to the idea of, we're going to sell this player, but we wanted to lock him up so we can get a bigger transfer fee. And historically in MLS, that's been a dangerous move for the player. I don't think it will be in either of these cases, though. And I can elaborate on that in a second, but I'm already talking a lot. So, Paul, what do you think of these deals, and kind of explain the implications for them for the listeners?
Yeah, I think it's really good business on the part of Colorado and NYCFC. You know, it's important to lock up your younger players to longer-term deals, like you said, to be able to negotiate a better transfer fee during the sales. And you can look at where teams didn't do this and how it goes wrong. I think Kyle Larin is probably the best example of that in Orlando, where they didn't renegotiate his deal at all. And he got fed up being paid a salary that was negotiated before he had kicked a ball in MLS and after scoring double digit goals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Of course, they also thought they had him under control for another year when it turned out he just left, but.
Yeah, I mean, it ended badly, right? It ended badly. And I think it could have been avoided. And in this case, this is a chance to do that. But to your point, Sam, you know, yeah, there's risk. There certainly is risk for the player that the team is going to sell you when those offers come. I just think we're in a changing MLS. And so I think if you can drive legitimate offers and legitimate interests, you're going to be sold out of this league. There's too much of a push from an ownership level to make this the norm for me to see, you know, more Aaron Long-esque situations. And
yeah,
to add on to that, Aaron Long is older than most of these players.
Yeah, much older. Yeah, I agree. And knowing what I know about NYCFC and Colorado and the people that are in charge at those clubs, you know, James Sands had a quote in the press release basically being, I don't remember the exact thing, but the gist of it was, yeah, like I want to go to Europe and NYCFC knows that. And like, I'm confident that by signing this deal, like that will not only not hurt me, but help me in that process. Right. And those clubs are both pretty savvy. I mean, both of them have, you know, they're owned by groups that own two of the biggest clubs in the world, in Arsenal and Manchester City. So they're, you know, they can tap into some savviness in those markets pretty quickly. And I don't know. I think if I was Vines or Sands, I would feel comfortable signing an extension and feeling like I would be sold. And I wouldn't say that about every MLS club, but with those two clubs, I think I would.
Sam, you said something that triggered a thought in my mind, which is, you know, it's kind of relieving and exciting in a way to finally see Red Bull New York start tapping into the Red Bull umbrella at a higher rate than they have in recent years. I think they've signed like 4 or 5 players from Salzburg or something. Not all now.
A lot of guys on loan. Yeah.
But they're finally starting to reap the benefits of that unofficial relationship between Red Bull, Salzburg, and Leipzig in New York.
Unofficial. Yeah.
Quote unquote unofficial. And it just made me think, how great would it be to see Colorado and Arsenal start to like actually act like they existed under the same ownership group?
I mean, like it's a damn shame that Thierry Henry came to MLS and he was not a Colorado Rapid. I mean, sin of the century.
Is it though?
I mean, is Denver cooler than New York?
I have been to Denver.
And?
It's a pretty cool city. No, honestly though, I mean, I think it would be really encouraging for Major League Soccer if you started to see that relationship bear a little bit more fruit. A couple loans here and there. Send a guy over. Give him a little help.
I don't think that's going to happen. But it would be interesting. Sure. Why not? Let's get it trending. I don't know. Do people say that? This show's gone too long.
Yeah, I think at this point, when you're trying to get stuff trending via allocation disorder in the 50th minute of the show, it's off the rails.
50th minute. We came out of halftime a little gassed tonight. What can we say? Thanks so much for listening. It's been a fun episode. It's been a strange episode. Paul will be back on The Athletic next week with a full power ranking of MLS cities. How cool are they? Until then, I'm Sam. He's Paul. This has been Allocation Disorder. Thank you so much for listening. Until next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.